we're going to see a lot of money spent between now and May, but that's the tip of the iceberg. That's a drop in the bucket.
That's nothing.
If this becomes Paxton Tallarico, plan on Democrats pushing in whatever they can push in. You know, certainly $100 million, and the Republicans are already planning to push in $200 million, which is money that does not get spent in North Carolina, Alaska, Georgia.
Anywhere. So, I mean, money like that hasn't been spent on a Senate race anywhere in history.
Yeah, and that's not on the bingo card. Spend $200 million in Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode of Yolitics. We're back at where Yolitics began.
Yeah, you know, this is like a birthplace.
This is where, it was, what, 6 years ago? We came here to shoot a promo.
Was 7 years ago.
Wow, you're keeping time. It's you're keeping track.
And it's been in dog years, so it's really like 49.
Yeah. We're at Cibo Divino. This is the Italian marketplace. They have several of them, but this one is technically in West Dallas. People in Oak Cliff, Kessler Park claim it. Mm-hmm. It's just west of the skyline, not too far from the place we like to go a lot. Manhattan Project. I remember
we actually shot a promotion for Yolitics out there on the patio, and if you go back and look at it now, it's like two teenagers.
No, we were young, and people were asking,
what is this for?
We said, Yolitics, it's a podcast. He said, never heard of it.
Yeah.
So here we are
seven years later. And we never get that anymore.
Exactly, right. But anyways, hey guys, there's a lot going on with Republican politics, with all politics, but there are a number of huge Republican runoffs coming up in what, less than 60 days now?
Yeah, a couple of big Democratic ones, too. So, you know, we'll see what turnout is like. It's May 26th, like you say, the day after Memorial Day. Man, those can be really tricky.
They can be, you know, after that holiday weekend here. But joining us to talk about all this, two of our favorites, Vinny Mancillo, Republican consultant, and Andrea Coker,
the Chief Advocacy Officer. Can you read my writing?
North Texas Commission.
Wow, okay.
Andrea, I've known you a long time. I didn't know you could come do this with us.
long time. Normally it's just me sending you stories and being like, will you talk about this?
This is good. But no, I'm glad you can come talk and join us in the conversation here. Let's start with the biggest race out there now that we keep seeing ads coming out in. And Vinny, I'm going to start with you on this.
Some nasty ones,
the
too.
The Cornyn-Paxton race coming up, the Republican race for U.S. Senate here. Man, this thing, these ads are the most vicious that I can recollect.
But right. You told us coming into this that when we headed to runoff, it was going to be a whole new level of nastiness. Have we gotten fully there?
Well, I don't think we're fully there yet, but we've seen unprecedented things. I mean, the week after the primary, the Cornyn campaign dropped a six-minute-long attack ad.
Jeez.
6 minutes, I mean, which is really made for you guys rather than the public.
Sure.
You know, and then last week, another minute 40 AI thing where they knocked off Love Shack and it was kind of silly
with
and
the mistresses
and, right.
I didn't think I'd ever have to see my attorney general swiping on Twitter or Tinder, but alas.
But there you go.
Here's what strikes me.
I think it's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
But here's what strikes me. These ads, I mean, hit below the belt.
Oh yeah.
But are they sticking at all? Is Cornyn getting any traction with these, do you think?
I've never seen the very conservative Republican electorate care less about infidelity since President Trump got elected three wives behind him. So I think we've seen a huge change in what voters are willing to accept from their politicians these days, as long as they stay on message about certain other conservative priorities.
It's the same thing true, though, with the corruption. Cornyn has put out so many ads. I mean, you know, even going into the stolen pen incident with Ken Paxton, I mean,
I don't think there is one consistent through line of here's what Ken Paxton did that was bad. They didn't make it an impeachment. It's not sticking as a message point.
Right.
They're saying he's corrupt. He took bribes. But what? Granite countertops? Like what are we talking about? They haven't made that stick in a cohesive, succinct way.
And why haven't they?
I think it's tough. I think it's tough. There's the Ken Paxton voters who will come out and vote no matter what. If they have to come out of the hospital and come out, they will come out and vote. But I think there's a group we've got to watch that is the suburban mom group, especially the college-educated suburban moms. And they're out on Ken Paxton. So what will they do? That's the group that Cornyn really needs to come back out.
Yeah.
And that's
like you said, the day after Memorial Day, unless there's a polling location open in Seaside, Florida, you might not get that.
They're on 38 somewhere.
Right.
Well, and we talk about how bad the numbers are in Texas for primary voting, and it's so important. It decides everything, and not enough people vote. You think that's bad? Look at runoff numbers. They're even worse.
Yeah.
The electorate is even older, even less diverse.
I was just,
Cornyn has to get those people back out.
I was just looking at a little bit of that from, you know, a historical perspective, and we look at 2012, for instance, which gave rise to Senator Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
He won in a special, in a runoff election that year. In the primary, they had about 1.4 million voters. The runoff had 1.1 million.
Come on in, Darryl. Bring the food in here.
Oh,
man.
Wait. We've got pizza arriving. I'll shut up for
a minute. This just in.
Go ahead. Wow. What are these numbers you were talking about?
Hold on. There's another pizza coming. So they went from about 1.4 million to 1.1 million in the runoff, which 1.1 million is actually pretty decent for a runoff. Then we go to 2014, this was Ken Paxton, first running for Attorney General. They had almost 1.3 million in the primary, 735,000 in the runoff. So, boy, you're hoping that whoever showed up for you there in March is going to come again in May, but in a lot of cases, they don't.
Well, and I was at a function mid-2014 between the primary and the runoff with then-Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst.
Yep.
And he said, we know there are more people who want me as Lieutenant Governor than want Dan Patrick. It's whether we can get him to the polls. Mm. He knew. He knew that was the goal. It's just he had to get people to the polls, and he didn't.
A lot of similarities between the Dewhurst race and this one.
You know, here's something else that I've thought about and people have raised to me. Cornyn is going after Paxton super hard on the infidelity, on the Tinder swiping, you know, in the ads, all this type of stuff. But some Paxton supporters said, well, you know, he's not making that big of a deal with Trump. He talks about he wants Trump's endorsement badly, and Trump has had the same allegations against him. Could that backfire against Cornyn at all? Is that one of the reasons, perhaps, that some of these ads aren't sticking?
You know, I think the reason those ads are not sticking is they're not personal. I think you've got these just blasting away at these hits, and they've tried to use comedy, they've tried to use scare tactics. I think they're not landing with that audience. So I would expect them next to do some things, expect some testimonials, how this has affected their somebody's lives, spots with women who reflect that audience that I'm talking about. If I was the Cornyn campaign, that's where I've got to go.
Now, is that what you mean when you say that this is going to go another level uglier?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
That it gets even more personal.
We have too long to keep those ads. They will continue to escalate. And I think you brought up the exact point, which was the Trump of it all. First, no Republican politician has lost siding closer to Trump, especially in a primary runoff in Texas. Yeah. And what is he going to do? It's the question we all have. We all thought 48 hours after the primary, we joked that we were just waiting.
He said for an endorsement.
Sure. For President Trump to finally say, this is the guy.
And he said he was going to weigh in so that they could prevent spending untold amounts of money.
Why didn't he?
I wish I knew. I'm totally lost on this. You know, he said he was going to endorse soon. Soon has come and gone.
Yeah.
We've now passed the day where you can take your name off the ballot.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I don't know.
And I think the interesting conversation is what President Trump is going to do in this Senate election. I think the more interesting conversation is that President Trump knows for the better of the ticket in November he should endorse Cornyn, but is seeing weakness with his own image in the grassroots of the Republican Party. The war in Iran, I think some of his endorsements are not landing as well. He's looking November in the face. He doesn't know what he's going to do when he's a lame-duck president. I think this is all swirling around, and he's seeing his influence lessen, and he does not want to lose.
Okay, so meantime, though, the money is just pouring in for this.
For Cornyn.
Yeah, and so what happens there? Where does that cost Republicans? It always costs you if you're diverting money to something that you didn't think you were going to have to divert money to, especially in sums like this. I mean, what are we going to see spent here by the time we get to the end of May, and where does that hurt Republicans nationally?
Well, we're going to see a lot of money spent between now and May, but that's the tip of the iceberg. That's a drop in the bucket.
That's nothing.
If this becomes Paxton Tallarico, plan on Democrats pushing in whatever they can push in. You know, certainly $100 million, and the Republicans are already planning to push in $200 million, which is money that does not get spent in North Carolina, Alaska, Georgia.
Anywhere. So, I mean, money like that hasn't been spent on a Senate race anywhere in history.
Yeah, and that's not on the bingo card. Spend $200 million in Texas.
Wow.
So That's what's at stake.
Susan Collins is up in Maine going, guys, whoa, I'm here.
Can I get a few dollars?
I'm a whole vote in the Senate, too. Like, I need some help.
So how does all this impact or affect Tallarico and Democrats? Is he just sitting on the sidelines watching the Republicans thrash against each other?
Well, listen, they're punching him in the face every day.
Yeah.
So we've learned lots about James Tallarico between
now and then. I'm tired of seeing tweets, to be honest, already. And it's, what is it, March?
You have a long time, Andrew. We have a long time.
I know.
Time to go.
Buckle in, yeah.
So I don't know. We're gonna beat him up between now and November, and it's like, does he really have a chance? You know, I think the math is, I think no, but I think it could be close-ish. I mean, I think this is like a Beto Cruz thing. I think Tallarico's biggest problem, you know, I brought some numbers. You know, if the Democrats could bring out all the people they brought out for the primary, you know, we could win. But that's not going to happen. I mean, I think the Jasmine Crockett voters, they're not coming out for Tallarico. It's just not.
But if you put a couple hundred million dollars into this, you might be getting some voters you didn't expect to show up, right? Some,
yeah. I think it's a margin of error race. If
I agree.
Wow. But speaking of things not sticking, so far, at least in the Democratic primary and up until, you know, this podcast here, nothing has stuck against Tallarico.
Nothing has stuck.
Does that surprise you guys?
No, because he's not the focus yet. Jasmine did not have the organization or the money to
late.
Make anything stick. Mm-hmm. She did not have message discipline. She did not have campaign discipline. She was hoping that name recognition and name ID and news hits would kind of do the work for her, and it almost did.
It almost did.
But James Tallarico has not faced a machine yet.
Right.
He will face the machine, not just a machine.
So is he doing the right thing right now, though, by not being as prominently out there? I mean, he's still doing some things, but not being as prominently out there and maybe banking as much money as possible.
100%.
And kind of letting these two just knock each other out in the headlines.
And it's crazy to think, because we all do this for a living, the average person isn't thinking about who they're voting for in November. Mm. We're hoping they're thinking about who they're voting for in the Republican runoff or that they know it exists.
Right.
But they're not thinking yet. You will see a slow increase of money being spent in the summer, and then just save the stack of postcards for kindling by the time Labor Day gets here.
There'll be a lot.
Going to be a lot.
There'll be plenty. And he's got to go around and convincing people that he's got a chance.
Yeah.
That he's not Beto O'Rourke. He's better. And that he can use that money and use it well.
But if Paxton's a nominee, you don't think that you still think it'll be a margin of error race? You don't.
I think it'll be close. I think it'll be very close, but I think Paxton wins it.
But Paxton underperformed against Cornyn.
Yeah, and look, Paxton not only underperformed against Cornyn, Paxton did terrible in Collin County.
Where people
know him best.
Yeah. Speaking of polls, they just came out with this new Impact Research poll, March 12th through 17th. Just 900 likely voters. They found Tallarico ahead of both of the Republicans this time. You've invoked Beto a few times. I don't think Beto ever led in the polls in the early going. It seems like he was always just behind and catching up, but he never quite got there. Is that informative at all at this point in the game?
I'm not taking 900 voters.
Yeah, that's
poll
too small
for
example.
Anything.
Yeah,
I'm not taking 900 voters,
especially not when you don't have a candidate.
Yeah.
A hypothetical is two, and not until November. No, I'm not taking that.
I'm not taking it either. Number one, I don't believe in polls. I don't pay for.
Nobody does.
Yeah, 900 voters is too small, and yeah, no candidate yet.
And you know, let's just center on that for a moment here, since we get in the weeds sometimes. A lot of polls are reputable polls in this state, depending on who does it, but reputable polls are 1,000 to 1,200, 1,500. That's a decent sampling size.
Yeah.
That's what I always look at as a measure. Is that what you guys look at?
I don't have an exact number. It's more,
than 1,000,
what the universe
though, right?
is. I've not done a ton of statewide polling. Mm-hmm. But I would take 1,000 in a congressional seat.
Okay.
That would be a great sample for a congressional seat. I don't know about statewide, though. I don't know how you accurately sample in 1,000 for a state the size of Texas. Mm.
I think the hard part about that, to answer your question, I'm like 1,200 plus likely voters, not registered voters.
Right, likely voters, a good point.
So that's a big difference. And still your margin of error is going to be 3.5% to 4%, probably higher.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. I think pollsters are struggling to figure out Democrats. Because we really have not had a good, you have to go back to the Beto race to go, all right, what's this? So there's no math there. So it's really, a lot of the art of polling is being exposed here.
So we have no doubt that we're going to see a Tallarico versus
somebody.
One of these two guys on a debate stage at some point. Mm-hmm. Do we see...
Will we see one of the debate
will
stage?
We,
I,
will
I,
we,
I don't know if we will.
If
I think we will
Paxton,
because they're close.
I don't do that.
I'm not going.
I'm not going.
Well, if you're in a margin of error race, wouldn't do it?
Ken Paxton has nothing to gain standing on a stage.
I think he has too much to lose. Yeah.
John Cornyn might, but even then, I don't know.
If it's Cornyn Tallarico, it's not a race, so it doesn't matter.
I agree.
So maybe you debate, maybe you don't.
You think even with inflation, even with the war in Iran, even with gas prices, you don't think it's a race?
No.
I think the Cornyn people will demolish Tallarico, and he won't be able to move that group that he needs to move.
Okay, so let me ask
this. We'll have the talk. Is it a race? Well, there'll be some polls. It'll be fun. We'll get to talk about it. Yeah. And at the end of the day, we're going to go drink at the Cornyn Party because they're going to have the happiest people.
Now, so are we going to see a debate between these two Republican contenders?
No.
No.
Not a chance.
0% chance.
And again, for the same reason, though. I don't see any reason why Paxton would get in front of a camera, right? No,
very few people win in a debate, but you can lose a race in a debate.
So wouldn't Cornyn do well to challenge him to a debate?
Oh, I would. 100%.
And did they try that earlier in the run?
I haven't seen that so far.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I would.
I don't know that they would manage. I think the Cornyn people are not scared of what would happen on the stage, but they are scared of what would happen in an audience. Huh.
I would do no audience. Oh, I would have a lot of rules.
But I don't think Paxton would agree to that.
Right. Paxton would want. They would never agree to the rules of a debate. So it would die right there, right? Just blaming each other. This guy won't debate me.
Let's talk about the CPAC conference. I was just reading the other day that do we have to? She says. I was reading the other day that Paxton, you know, of course, is going to be there. Cornyn is not. Right call for him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He'll get booed.
He would get heckled off the stage. Get heckled.
You don't want that visual out there.
No. Right.
Yeah. And that turns into ads and earned
even
media
the,
over
even
and over.
Even the creator, like, CPAC is not what it once was.
Mm. CPAC, for people who might not know, Conservative Political Action Committee, it's like the place that...
It used to be. I think it used to be.
Fallen off.
I think it's further right and a smaller, more radical group.
Right.
I think this group of CPAC looks at Trump and goes, not far enough.
Wow.
That's my opinion. I kept seeing the announcements of who was speaking at CPAC, and I got to the point where I couldn't tell which ones were real and which ones were jokes.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was one I was like, that one's funny. I was like, that one's real. That one's real. No. Chris Lee from Chris Lee Knows Best is really coming to see.
Oh, is he coming?
I think that's real.
Oh, okay, I would have gone to see that.
So I think it's lost some of its luster, and John Cornyn is not welcome in that space. Nor would he have anything to gain from being there.
It's funny, if you want to get a crowd laugh line at a county Republican convention, all you have to do is say John Cornyn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Really. It's that bad.
100%.
But that's also not new. I was at the Republican convention in 2014 and saw him get booed.
At the state convention.
Sure. He has never been the darling of the grassroots.
Right.
He's never been that guy. He's been, you know, we had Ted Cruz for that. We kind of have one of each.
Sure.
We have a grassroots senator and a Bush Republican Chamber of Commerce establishment senator has kind of been the accepted. But he won his last primary. He won his last general. I don't even remember that lady who rode the motorcycle and all her ads' his name that he beat in 20.
Did he stay too long, though? Has Cornyn stayed one time too long?
I don't know. And if Ken Paxton...
You don't know?
I don't have an opinion on that today. If Ken Paxton had not been waiting in the wings, would we have seen a different retirement decision from John Cornyn?
Huh.
I think we would have.
Or would we have seen a bigger primary with some more competitive candidates?
Which
Paxton may have won anyway.
I think he did not want to cede his seat to Paxton and saw him as inevitable if he retired. And that's why we are in this pickle.
I think we would have seen. Is it personal? Why? Even before the campaign began and these vicious attack ads,
they've hated each other.
They do not like each other.
They have not liked each other. And I don't know when a personal feud started, but the camps of Paxton and Cornyn, I feel like, are microcosms of maybe the country's division in the Republican Party.
I agree with that.
So both of them, though, are dragging each other in all of these ads. As both of you say, it's only going to get, you know, more
Kim
extreme
Paxton
from
likes
here.
To remind you that John Cornyn can't cook a good brisket. And that's about what they've got.
Even though he does don that cowboy hat now.
And boots.
On the border.
And
yes.
boots. And proudly acknowledges the actual fact he has voted with the president 99% of the time. I feel like my kids could recite that from all of the ads on YouTube that we've heard.
Just a quick side note, kind of behind the scenes thing. It was on the record, but it's behind the scenes. I asked, when that first ad came out with Cornyn, I asked him, and he said, I voted with the president 99.3% of the time, or something like that. I said, Senator, what was the 0.7%? He said, oh, that was, I can't remember what that was. He didn't want to release whatever that was. I'm sure he knew whatever bill it was.
But that's not the issue.
The beginning of the end for Cornyn was when he made the gun deal with the Biden folks.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that was after the El Paso Walmart massacre, is that right?
Right, I think that's right. Yeah. And you know what? For gun owners, at this time, it was probably a good deal for gun owners.
And he thought he had license. I mean, Dan Patrick, lieutenant governor, also, you know, bashed the NRA at that time on that issue. But he didn't have license to do it, didn't carry through.
Right, so it stuck, and that was the beginning of the end. Yeah,
for him. Going back to that impact research, though, thing, one of the things that stood out.
Wheeler's on this impact research.
Yeah. Did you take the 900? Are you one of the 900?
He's under the hood.
It's just 900 likely voters there. But they found the unfavorability ratings for both of these men were pretty high. They were pretty underwater.
If people have spent $100 million to talk crap about you for months, your unfavorability ratings are going to be high.
That's where I'm going with this, though, because we're going to endure months more of this. Mm-hmm. It found that both men are more disliked than Senator Ted Cruz, who, you know.
He's having a great year.
Yeah, he's actually looking good now with these two. How do you turn that ship around once you get past the runoff? Because you all, you know, deal with image and consulting and so forth. How do you turn that image around and try to pull in those independents again and to pull in, you know, fellow Republicans who didn't vote for this candidate and improve that image?
Do you?
I
mean, look at the president's, you know, approval ratings are very low. I don't think you worry about it. I just think you steam ahead.
Okay.
And it's really more let's bash James Tallarico than try to build yourself up, really. I mean, I think that's the job.
And I think this is going to be a fascinating campaign. Let's say it's Cornyn who is the winner because he has the money and I think the machine to do this. You are going to see two campaigns immediately. You are going to see a campaign to the Republicans, and now with digital and mail, you will be targeted based on how you vote. I will see different ads than someone who has voted not in a primary election because I have a Republican. I will see all different ads. I will see him with the president. I will see all the things he's done for the Republican Party when I open the internet, when I open Facebook, what I get in my mail, and someone who doesn't have a primary voting history maybe is demographically more independent is going to see a much more moderate campaign from John Cornyn on direct-to-video, on their digital ads. They're going to see maybe things about his gun bill, maybe that he does this and this and is an independent fighter. That's what they're going to see. So we're really going to see an apex, I think, this time of two complete campaigns being run side by side.
More so than normal.
More so than, more money than has ever been done before. Yeah. No campaign has ever been waged this expensively that's going to target it in this way. Trump was not interested in a double campaign. He said, I am who I am, let's go.
And I don't know that the Paxton people have those tools in the toolbox.
They don't.
So that's what you were talking about.
That's what the Democrats are hoping.
The best positioned.
It's not just that he's the best positioned because I think he's the more moderate candidate. Sure. I think that's accepted. It's that he has hired the right people, hired the right consultants, has the money behind him.
He's been around for a minute.
He's been around for a minute. He's done this before. Mm-hmm. He's got a ground game, and he's not afraid to go and campaign hard, and he knows what he's doing.
Let's talk about the few other races here.
Wait, one more thing on this
Just real quick. What's the margin of error on that survey? Come on.
I was going to ask both of you, you know, y'all have consulted for a lot of candidates. You get real close to them. Is this how you would have advised these two men to run in this runoff? Paxton and Cornyn. Or have you seen something where you go, gosh, that's so ill-advised, I would not do that, or I would be doing so much more of this?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So I think what, you know, they're... a runoff is really identifying who came out in the primary
and getting them back out.
It's data.
And so if you're the Paxton campaign, that's a relatively mechanical thing, just like Ted Cruz beat David Dewhurst, and it's a lot of the same consultants, so they know how to do this. Cornyn, much heavier lift. He's got to get people back out, and plus he's got to get more people that maybe didn't vote in the primary, and then he's got to bash Ken Paxton.
And maybe he doesn't animate his voters the same way that Ken Paxton
does.
I mean, I think that's an understatement. And one more last question on this.
One more last question.
Let's mark that down for the record.
Still Paxton's to lose, I think.
What?
Really?
I think so.
Okay.
So when we get past this runoff, though, especially if it's really, you know, nasty, as you guys say it's going to be heading in, how hard is it going to be to pull back the voter from the other side who voted, you know, if Cornyn gets through, how hard is it to get that Ken Paxton voter to come over in November, or will they just sit at home?
Yeah.
That's the job of making James Tallarico so unappealing that you can stomach Ken Paxton if you're a Cornyn voter, or Cornyn if you're a Ken Paxton voter. You will have some who don't. But you're always going to have that in a contentious primary. You're going to have a Marco Rubio voter who never voted for Trump. Like, that is politics. But it won't be in numbers that will matter.
Right. I agree with that.
What else is on the survey?
That's my last question on that subject.
Last one.
Oh, okay. I thought you had a Wesley Hunt voter question in there.
How do Wesley Hunt do on that survey?
That is an interesting thought.
We haven't gotten that.
They said what everybody is saying, which is who?
They're staying home.
Everybody's
anyway,
moved on. Yeah.
So the Republicans in the state and the state legislature redistricted, hoping to get five more seats for Republicans in Congress. Republicans I'm talking to say we, in reality, anticipate two or three.
I think three.
You think three? So which are the seats that didn't pay off for them, do you think?
I think they made these lines on a high watermark of the 24 election, especially down in the valley, especially near the border. With all that's gone on with ICE, and maybe they pivot. Maybe they can turn all of this narrative around. I've heard that Republicans have been told to stop talking about mass deportations, that when they were in Florida with the president a few weekends ago, he said, actually, maybe let's stop making that our main talking point because it's hurting us. It says a lot. Yeah. And was it this week that President Trump at Mar-a-Lago is now represented by a Democrat in the state house? Like, we have not seen the last of the president's ICE and DHS decisions come back, and it's a matter of how deep those cuts are going to be, and I think it costs the Republicans seats down in the valley.
In the valley?
I think in the valley, I agree with you where we're talking about, but I think it's economy. I think $3.50 gas is a really acute problem down in the valley.
Yeah.
So I think it's economy.
Okay.
And those folks have got to feel a better economy. Right now, they're not.
So when you think about specific seats down in the valley, are you thinking maybe the Monica De La Cruz, Bobby Pulido race?
I'm thinking of that one. And I'm also thinking of Herrera now that he's the candidate. I don't know that is the seat Tony Gonzalez could. Tony Gonzalez would have not had a problem. Tony Gonzalez 3 months ago, I guess, would have not had a problem.
Maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that... Brandon Herrera is the guy.
So Tony Gonzalez, just to inform our listeners here too, is the current sitting congressman.
Sitting
decided
congressman.
Not to run again after admitting to an affair.
Was told not to run again.
To run again after admitting to an affair in which the with a staffer, which a staffer self-immolated too. So that was a scandal he couldn't get out from under.
And
Herrera is the dog that caught the car. So I mean I'm sure the NRCC is sending people down to help him and prop up his campaign because he's got nothing.
But you think he's in jeopardy? You think that could be in play?
Absolutely.
I also think even if that seat he manages to hang on to that seat, his extensive internet videography will be used against Texans statewide.
He has a big YouTube channel. That's where
he's known
for.
Huge YouTube channel with a lot of inflammatory things. That is going to be used to raise money across the country.
Absolutely.
Like, that is going to be a huge fundraiser for Democrats. Anytime there is a candidate like that is so inflammatory, even if that doesn't affect their little race, it is used and extrapolated and a problem for the party as a whole now.
That's a good point. Yeah, good ammo there. For them.
Pun intended.
Pun like very that? Much intended.
Hey-o.
Give me on the payroll here, guys.
Just went way out there with that one. I know that you all are, you closely watch what happens on the Republican side, but obviously you keep up with what the other side's doing. Which races are you watching the most when we get to this runoff ballot in
for
May?
I
would think Julie Johnson, all red.
That's the really only one in North Texas that I'm following or paying much attention to. And I think it's fascinating. A sitting rep, but not running for her seat, and a former rep who ran for that's a fascinating.
It is.
But also the the Black Caucus Democrats came in to support Julie Johnson against a Black candidate. Hakeem Jeffries, the House, came in for Julie Johnson. He's got the money because he wrote himself a check from his Senate campaign down to his congressional campaign. It's fascinating.
So what happens there? What happens with that seat?
And this kind of goes against, normally I'm like, money, organization, that's your winner. But in this case...
And who is that, Julie Johnson?
That's Colin Allred.
Colin has the money.
But Colin Allred...
Well, he has the money, but I'm sorry, does he have the organization?
He bought it.
She bought it, yeah. But he continues to run the most boring campaign in the country. On paper, he should have run away with the Senate primary.
Yeah.
He's a dreadfully boring campaign candidate, running a dreadfully boring campaign. Julie Johnson's outworking him. I don't agree with her on anything, but I kind of hope she wins.
On paper, Colin should have run away with that without a runoff because Jasmine Crockett supporters supported him, and she crushed it in that district.
Yep.
And yet, I think a lot of those voters, there was huge turnout. They came out for Jasmine Crockett. They didn't come out for Colin Allred. He just got a byproduct vote.
And they're not coming back.
And I don't think they're coming back. It costs a lot. It costs a lot to turn out people to vote in a runoff, and I don't think they're coming back.
How important is Jasmine Crockett heading into November for Tallarico? I mean, you know, you talked about how she got in the game late. She didn't have the discipline that maybe she needed as a candidate. But she's got a huge following,
Here
in Texas and across the country
among
Democrats.
And I think she sees the opportunity to become a national leader going into this. Like, she wants to be that presence, that personality. Yeah. You saw it in her campaign. You saw it when she was in Congress, or she's still in Congress.
Well, to do that, doesn't she have to produce results?
She needs to go and turn out her voters for James Tallarico in this race and across the country. I think she will be deployed across the country to go raise money and become a national figure.
And she's done that before for Kamala Harris, for Joe Biden.
She's done some fundraising, but it was more she was going up. This is her starting to help other people. You know, she could become a figure in the Democrat Party, I think, if she plays it right and is willing to do the work. But it's hard work.
If she wants to do it. So far, she hasn't.
I think that's
a lot of humble pie to eat. To go and try to get your voters to turn out for Tallarico.
What's her next job? What do you think she does?
I think she wants to be on MSNBC really bad.
I wouldn't be surprised if she wants a show, she wants to be a commentator, but the way to prove that would be to be out doing
this.
Showing that you're a kingmaker, essentially.
Exactly. Showing that your opinion matters and moves things.
Let me ask this about, because we hopscotched around and talked about a couple of these races down in the Valley and there in West Texas, as well as in Dallas that are, in runoffs. How much does that, help Democrats in this case, if they still have these races that are hot races going into November, is what I meant to say, going into November, does that help the up ticket? Usually it's the top of the ticket that helps the bottom of the ticket. Do some of those races help the top of the ticket and getting voters out?
I think it can, but we'll see. I mean, there's really not a hot statewide runoff for the Democrats, so they
well but
they've
you
got
mean in
thing.
November like some of these congressional races, you're gonna see a few, but they down the ones down in the Valley, maybe. I'm trying to think of the closest one in North Texas, the closest Republican Democrat congressional race in North Texas. Is there one? I don't think there's one within 8 points of the other. So you're not going to see that bump in North Texas.
How crucial are those ones in the Valley, though, if they do energize Democrats who think that they have a chance to flip a couple of those seats down there? Because Democrats sorely missed those voters the last time around.
We have also neglected to talk about the $105 million war chest elephant in the room, which is Greg Abbott.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Greg Abbott will be the secret sauce to keeping Texas red. It will be Cornyn as well if he wins the runoff, but Greg Abbott is sitting on over $100 million, and he has a turnout operation. He has a ground game.
He will
turn out people to vote.
Now, down on the border, there were also a lot of hot local races in those Democratic primaries that people came out for.
Yeah.
Not sure if they're coming back.
No, and not sure if they'll vote Democrat. A lot of people vote Democrat in a primary because that's where everything else is.
Sure.
And in the Valley, you're going to see that especially. That's why their numbers are so high. They had a lot of highly contested Democrat races.
And you think those people cross back over to Republicans in November?
Not yes or no, but I'm not saying you can count on them as Democrats.
And the other big runoff coming up in the Democratic side is Christian Menefee, Congressman Menefee in Harris County versus Al Green. That's a generational thing we've talked about in the past.
It is.
Who has the edge there, do you think? I mean, Al Green has the name. People see his name on the ballot, but he's not running in his district
was
redistricted. So any idea who has the edge there? Does Menefee, since he's an incumbent?
I would love to make something up for you, Jason, but I don't know.
What does the poll say, Jason?
We
surveyed 38 people.
38 likely voters. You always hate to see somebody like Joe Biden or Al Green.
Hangs on too long.
Hang on too long.
Sure.
Take the victory lap and go home. I think Al Green's in trouble on this.
I think he
should have just packed it up, taken the victory lap.
Menefee has just won that district in close enough.
Still has motivated voters.
He's young. He's got money.
Yeah.
People like this change. I think across the board, you're seeing Democrats go younger and further left. They're maybe having their Tea Party moment.
I just would like to pass a bill, though, that Al Green is allowed to come back to every state of the union.
That's already done. He can. All right, then he can be good. On the floor.
As long as he has his staff.
He's got his little thing.
Whatever, bring it.
Exactly.
let me ask y'all both this, because we've seen this from the Cornyn campaign and from the Paxton campaign. We're going to see it in so many more, this use of AI in ads. Yes. And I
hate
mean,
it.
It's out there.
Hate
it's
it.
Happening.
Hate
it's,
it.
Yeah,
it's
you
cheap,
hate it.
Isn't it?
I mean,
yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah.
You know what? It is and it isn't. And there's, you know, there are levels of AI that
right.
Almost every ad we've got that goes out has a little bit of AI in it. At
oh,
least.
Wow. Really? Every one?
You know, whether it's a transition or we've color corrected something using AI. Yeah. So yeah. It's kind of minor treatments. But yes, we've seen like a minute and a half ad from the Cornyn people.
Total.
That's all AI. Some states are having very rigorous legal, you know, disclaimers need to put on there. And what we're seeing is in research that when people see the AI disclaimer, it sets their BS meter way up.
Really?
Yeah. So people are really, in states that have that disclaimer,
so that's
it's
not
making
coming
it very
Texas?
Difficult.
That won't happen
yeah,
in
we
Texas,
don't do that here, though. Yeah.
We don't do that here.
Yeah.
We tried. We tried.
There was a bill in the last session, and it
died?
It died.
Tell me why you hate it.
First of all, like Vinny, I have spent many years making political ads, and taking so much time and thought and effort. And I think sometimes you look at campaign things as the mark of a good candidate and thoughtful work, and that's how they're going to be in Congress or as mayor or as president. And I hate that like anybody now with a pro ChatGPT account can make the same thing. I saw a logo the other day and I was like, that's ChatGPT. Like you can
you know,
pick
right
it.
Away.
Just like anytime you see an animal video now, you're
yes.
like, that's not real.
My
and
wife
like,
keeps showing me those and I'm like, that's not real. Stop putting that in my face.
And everybody's mom sending them things. They're
yes.
like, look how cute. And you're like, mom, it's AI.
That's not real.
Stop.
So, and you wonder about what the future looks like too, because we're in the baby stage of AI and it just makes you think like, wow, where is this going to go with political advertising?
Yeah.
And some people don't spot it like you do right away, and they think everything they see is true and real.
Well, and even let's take Cornyn. He did a 6-minute ad with all of these things about Ken Paxton's dating life and all this, and we know it's mostly true because we've seen it. What, he could have made the same ad and none of it be true.
Okay, yeah.
There's no bar of proof. Mm-hmm. Like, no one was going to take him to jail if it wasn't true. What are we going to see now with the power of storytelling? The power of storytelling is huge, and now people have that power at their disposal for anything. It doesn't have to be a good actor. It doesn't have to be even anyone with enough money to make it happen. Anyone could do it. You could sit down tomorrow and make an ad that was completely untrue, but it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. And real.
And
untrue.
Real. Mm-hmm. And
that's
real.
The real danger is people at home doing things. I mean, look, the campaigns, professional campaigns are going to be big boys and girls and try to do the right thing, you know, using AI. But somebody
sometimes.
At home. Somebody,
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, there's going to be some who don't. Yeah.
But somebody at home on their couch making something that looks very convincing.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Well,
yeah, right.
Let me ask you this last thing here. This headline took me by surprise in the New York Times the other day. The Dallas is likely going to be the place for the Republican National Committee's midterm convention later this summer.
Yeah. Which is an odd thing.
Conventions take years to spin up. What is a midterm convention? And is this just to rally voters when the president thinks that they're going to get walloped in Congress?
I kind of love it. I think it's a great thing.
Marketing idea, I guess.
Look, midterm. You know, it's always been the you know the law that the party in power is going to get creamed in the midterms. Why does it have to be that way? So I think it's great.
Gas
Let's come
prices.
Up with an idea for you know a way to try to fix that. Is this the answer? I don't know, but I kind of like it.
What would this look like? I mean, a big venue with a pretty stage and spotlights and people talking,
well,
giving speeches.
And think of the big conventions. Both parties see bumps after their conventions because they go and they get. And think of Trump's relationship with the FCC. Like they might broadcast it. He's going to come speak. I'm sure we'll have some good speakers. Everything will be great. He'll get media time out of it. He's probably hoping for that bump. I also think, just like many things with President Trump, there is no rule book anymore. There is no guidebook. There is no calendar that everyone's following. This is not going to be the last thing we see that's a completely new something, probably from either side.
Yeah.
I don't think it's exclusive to Republicans.
Yeah. It is televised. If it's televised, though, will Democrats then have the right to scream, hey, fair time, we got to have equal time here?
Heck yeah.
They can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
but
a very
they
disruptive
also have to plan
idea.
A party too.
Right. Yeah, I think it's disruptive, which I like, and I think with our very fractured media environment, it's hard to get groups of viewers together to watch something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even if the midterm thing is just to generate clips for social media, at least it's all on message. Everybody's together, and it's a unified thing.
Well, and when you think of Trump's re-election this time, we should honestly be surprised we didn't already call that he was going to do this. The man likes a rally.
Yeah.
He likes a stage. He likes a full room.
And earned media and free TV.
He likes that earned media. Like, there was nothing outside of the Trump wheelhouse in this.
Do the Republicans need this convention in this midterm, though?
Yes.
I think they do. I think the party's as fractured as it's ever been, as we are seeing in this Paxton-Cornyn thing. That's a real demonstration of the schism.
That leads to my next question. It's been reported that it would be perhaps at the American Airlines Center in Dallas. Is Dallas the right place to do this, nationally speaking?
Yes.
And why so?
I think Texas as a whole is the epicenter of a growing and thriving economy. I think you can't make that case for any other state. He's not going to do it in a bigger or more populous state. Those are Democrats.
Yeah.
He's going to give it to a red state. He's going to give it to a red state that needs a boost. I think North Texas is a testament to, he'll claim the success and the growth and the incredible Texas miracle as being part of the Trump policies. Greg Abbott will get to claim it as some of his policies, rightly so, with all that they have done for business. North Texas is a cosm of everything going right in the economy. This is the perfect place to have it, to look around and say, look at the growth, look at all that it's done. We have to stay in power so we can keep doing this.
And does it help heal some of the wounds in this bruising Texas Senate GOP runoff?
I don't think they thought about it that deeply.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I
haven't
thought
that. It's about
I don't think it does either.
We can fill the room.
Yeah.
We can fill the room.
Yeah.
Or at least fill portions of the room to get a good shot.
No, we can fill the room.
There's not a lot of Republican congressmen you will not see through DFW on a fundraising swing, at least quarterly. This is where the Republican money is.
The ATM.
It's the ATM for the entire party. This and a little part of Florida. So it makes perfect sense to have it here.
Mm. Wow. Good stuff, guys. Always love the conversation.
You all need to get in on those truffle fries. Well, Jason and I have been eating those, and it's almost gone.
We need to get some people in the survey here, too, Wheeler.
We'll work on that another time. We got two pizzas to get through here and some more beer.
I got called on a Paxton survey last week.
Did you really?
They kept calling, pronouncing John Cornyn's name wrong.
What did they say?
Call it?
Corin?
Corin?
John Corin? Corin? Really? And I corrected her, and she goes, well, that's what it says on my pronunciation sheet.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's great.
Was it a Russian bot or what was it?
No, we had a whole conversation about it.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I get those texts all the time. Hey, would you participate in the survey? I so want to, but I think it's a friend of mine or it's the other side trying to set me up.
Oh, no,
up,
I'm always going to participate. I'll take a survey.
So you answer the questions.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Interesting.
Always.
All right, guys, thanks so much. Vinnie Michillo, our longtime Republican consultant friend of ours, Andrea Coker, the chief advocacy officer.
Chief of advocacy sounds good.
At the North Texas Commission.
Like,
thank you for being on.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much, y'all. This is going to be interesting. An interesting couple of months and then several months after that, too. It's just going to be race after race after race here.
Don't forget, we have municipals before we even have a primary runoff.
Can't keep up with them all.
That's another episode.